We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to Striking Gold, your 49ers podcast on the Blue Wire Network. My name is Rob Lauder. I cover the 49ers for Blue Wire. And joining me tonight is my co-host, the man that runs the beast that is Niners Nation, KP, Kyle Posey, on the ground at training camp. What's going on, man?
First cousin of Buster, of course. I'm doing well, man. It was at
Buster Posey.
There it is. Good. It is with us. Okay.
Well done.
Oh, it's great, man. It's cool. I love being able to see football in person. It's been a while. And by a while, I mean not high school athletes. 49ers, a little bit better than a 4A school in Phoenix, Arizona. So I'm doing well, man. Love to see the overreactions. I think one of the most fun parts about this is to see the people there and to see what I see, to see what reporter A sees, to see what reporter B sees. And just, I think that's actually a good thing where we can all watch the same thing and come up with different opinions. So looking forward to a week full of this, man. How's your weekend going?
Chill, man. Obviously I'm not there with you. I am just at home trying to do, I mean, it's my summer break, so I can't really complain. Just trying to do everything I can do to, you know, still participate in the action. But for the most part, you're just kind of, everything's secondhand. I mean, I can still be in there for the press conferences or at least watch them and all the player stuff, which has still been plenty of interest. But there's nothing compares to being able to stand there and watch practice. And the big thing for me, and this kind of goes into what you're just saying, is being able to see things firsthand to make my own analysis of what I think it means, what it looked like, how great it was. You know what I mean? Like, because you got to see firsthand how other people presented the information and whether it was spun worse than it was or way better than it should have been, you know, all that stuff. So that's kind of the part, at least this offseason, that I miss the most, is just being able to figure out shit for myself. Mm-hmm. You know, and you don't get to do that. But at least we've got you, man. We've got you. So, obviously, the thing that everybody wants to hear right out the gate is, and I'll ask you this just from, I mean, because today was your first practice, right?
Correct.
Okay, so just in your first practice, still got quite a few more to go, and obviously all of a preseason. Do you think that there's or going to be a competition for the starting quarterback?
Unquestionably. There's no way you can watch the team practice and not think that. So Jimmy is the starter, and he is, so the best way to determine, you know, if there are reps is who's working with the center, like who's working with Alex Mack, not who Trey Lance is throwing to, because Brandon Ayuk's playing with the first, second, and third team. Like, he's running with Nate Sudfeld and Josh Rosen too, so that's not, you know, a good indicator at all. But I mean, just based on Lance's athleticism, his arm strength, where he's throwing the ball, and by that I mean the depth at which he's throwing it, the plays that they're drawing up for him. There are clear packages where, you know, inside zone turns into zone read. That's not the case with Jimmy G, obviously. Zone read turns into an RPO. So, like, they have different parts of their offense that they can add and build off of what they do with Lance, which will be pretty dangerous because, I mean, super athlete, big arm, obviously has to iron out some wrinkles in his game. But to say that there's not a quarterback is really naive. And, again, when Shanahan said that, Trey Lance hadn't done anything, so of course not. So he knows what he's doing with his words, but there's a quarterback competition.
Yeah, and that's kind of what I always assumed was that, you know, as of going into training camp, of course Jimmy Garoppolo's the starter. No one has taken his job yet. Why wouldn't he be? But when you have the – now, if this was just a quarterback that they drafted, I don't know, fourth, fifth, sixth round, or an undrafted one like they've had in the past, I guess C.J. Beathard was still a late third. When a coach tells you that's not a quarterback competition, you're like, okay, got it, cool, moving on.
Yep.
But when you say that and it's the third overall pick is the other guy, it's a little harder to kind of buy into it. And now people are slowly starting to see why, because Trey Lance is just, he's Trey Lance and he's the third overall pick. And there's a lot of things he brings to the table that are going to be tough to ignore. You just know you're going to see that. Whether or not he puts together a solid training camp overall is yet to be seen. But you know, no matter what, you're going to see things that make you go, damn, like, okay, this is a little different. But why don't you give us your overall thoughts and feelings on what you saw today?
Yeah, and I'll start with Jimmy because that's where a lot of the narrative was like he did not have a bad practice. He made some poor throws, but I don't think he played poorly at all. I felt like he was outplaying Lance right up until like 5-7 minutes before the end of practice. So like he came out, he was sharp, he was decisive, he knew where to go with the football. One of his first throws was actually on like a bootleg where Brandon Ayuk runs a post corner back across the field, and Jimmy hits him like on a line 30 yards outside of the numbers. And all the complaints are, you know, Jimmy doesn't throw the ball well outside of the numbers. And he did that right out of the jump, right out of the gate. From there, he had a back shoulder corner route to Ross Dwelly, which you don't see often. But it was clear that, like, it was evident that he did that on purpose. I thought he had the three best throws during Saturday's practice. But there's always a but. So like, to be fair, he was more aggressive and he did scramble and pull it down when the receivers weren't open, because when we can get to that, there was about a 4 minute period there where, just nobody was getting open. So the defense probably won again. But he was good outside of a few plays that he's always going to want back. So, one of the first plays in the second team period, Jason Verrett broke up a pass on a curl route from Brandon Ayuk. That was more Verrett being good and not, you know, I'm not sure what Jimmy could have done. I don't think it was a velocity issue or anything like that. But there were three where you're just like, nope, can't do that. Not at this age. Not with this many reps in the NFL, or just having played in the NFL for this long. So the first one was Trey Sermon was leaking out of the backfield. Defense brought pressure. So there was a hot, and when that's the case, you are going to have plenty of space. And it was Sermon and nobody else. So Jimmy could have just lofted the ball out there, didn't get enough on it, and Azeez Al-Shaire jumped up, deflected it. Like, it went right through his hand. So it probably should have been a pick, but it like counts as a PBU. That can't happen.
Is that kind of like that interception that Nick Bosa had?
It was honestly, that was a great way to describe it. So yeah, he just the one guy caught it and the other guy didn't.
Right.
The other
Nick
one,
Bosa,
was,
good at football, everybody.
Yeah. Shame on Azeez Al-Shaire for not being as good as
I know.
So the other one was a pick six to Fred Warner, and it's something that we've seen time after time after time. Speaking of, it's the same game. Remember the Kuechly interception?
Yep.
So he threw it right to him, and this has been an issue where I believe he did it against the Cardinals too. where it's just that underneath guy. He throws it right to him, doesn't see him. It was a slant. The linebacker is buzzing to the flat. Most of the time you wait for the second window. He throws it in the first window. And Fred Warner, it was essentially an extended handoff. Like, that's how easy it was.
Now, just to ask this, do you think that play would work? Because obviously you mentioned Kuechly, who is one of the best linebackers to ever play. Warner's looking like he could be of that same caliber. Is that a play that works against lesser linebackers, or it's just a stupid throw in any regard?
Yeah, I'm not willing to give Warner credit here. I think it that's just a no-no. You can't make that throw. So any linebacker is going to go to the flat in that scenario because that's his job in cover three. So, yeah, it was a football 101 mistake, which is which can't happen. And it has happened, and far too often. So that was an issue. So those
it was a Jimmy throw.
Yep. That's a good way to put it. So the final one was an interception where we all know he doesn't have the strongest arm down the field, and the ball got kind of hung up there. So the big issue was just before he even threw the ball. So a shot play, drawing up a deep pass for Brandon Ayuk, a sting route. So he's running up. I'm sure there's other names for it. I call it a sting route. He runs up, fakes like he's going to the corner, runs back to the post. You have it where you have one-on-one. If you throw it on time and early, at worst, incomplete. At best, long catch, maybe touchdown. And then, you know, the best of, you know, some of the worlds, all the worlds, both worlds. It's a PI. So you just have to go throw it on time and give your receiver a chance to make a play. He saw it. He pumped. Then hesitated. So like hitch. And then tried to throw it again. Was way too late. Does not have the arm strength to be throwing the ball when the receiver is already 20-plus yards down the field. And the ball just kind of hung up there like a punt. Was just like woefully underthrown. And Jason Rett makes the play where he looks like he's catching, like he's returning a punt. So that was not a good play at all. So it's more of the decision-making and inconsistency with Jimmy. And after that, he kind of went into a shell. Was not nearly as aggressive after that. Didn't really want to throw the ball into tight windows. But again, like, he had good throws. He found Trent Sherfield on a corner route. He was still throwing the ball outside the numbers, which I think is important. But has to come back to consistency, man. And it wasn't there. I think one part of the narrative is the way he finished and the way Trey Lance finished, because Lance started the way Jimmy finished. And by that, he didn't turn the ball over, but he wasn't throwing the ball into tight windows. He wasn't aggressive. It seemed like, because on Friday, what we heard was Lance was too aggressive. So perhaps it was an overcorrection. And he finished 7 of 12, and Muhammad Sanu actually dropped a pass. So if you just go based off that, you would think he had a great day. But he had a couple completions where he's throwing the ball behind receivers, and they bailed him out. So if we do that for Jimmy, we have to do that for Trey as well. I feel like that's only fair. There doesn't have to be like that type of bias involved. But as always, this guy can run. And real quick, he had another incompletion where it should have been a touchdown. Richie James beats Ken Webster, has a step on him, and James ends up catching the ball, but Lance doesn't leave the ball in bounds. He doesn't give he doesn't give James a chance to make a play. And I mean, it goes down as an incompletion, but that's a big no-no to me. Like, you can't do that. And we would crush Jimmy for doing that. So I know he's a rookie. I know it's day four, but he's been playing football long enough to throw the ball in bounds. A lot of these completions, like, he's just throwing RPOs. So it's like pitch and catch in breaking routes over the middle. I'm not going to give Jimmy a lot of credit for those. So again, at the same time, I'm not going to, you know, crown Trey Lance for hitting these wide open in breaking routes where, you know, you're sucking up the defense on purpose. But again, back to the butt, super athlete, man. When the defense goes man, there's nobody for Lance and he's running and there's nobody to guard. Like, there's nobody to stay with him. He's going to outrun everybody on the second level. It's so evident that he's just another speed, and he adds a different dimension because they ran a zone read. I think it was four times, and every time just like a chunk play where, sure, he's not, you know, they can't hit him, but I mean, there's just no way that's going to catch him in that scenario. So you have the RPOs, stealing. You have the zone read, easy pitch and catch. And that also helps the running backs too, because when he carries out those fake, you know, those fakes, a linebacker is going to stay, and that leaves something for Trey Sermon or Raheem Mostert. So promising in that sense. And sure, he has to get more consistent, but it's pretty evident that there's a quarterback competition.
Yeah, it'll be cool to look at. I just don't know. One thing I need to look at is when Jimmy Garoppolo's, like, the majority of his contract becomes guaranteed for this season. Might have already been there. I'd have to look at his stuff, because let's say that there's a world where Trey Lance wins the quarterback competition. The 49ers are convinced they want him to start week one. But there's nobody that's willing to trade for Jimmy Garoppolo. You know what I mean? What do you do then?
Oof. So
you don't, I mean, you, he's worth a lot of money. So
do you just outright release him? Cause, and we're a long ways away from that, but so people will think, so with Carson Wentz, he's going to miss at least 5 weeks, maybe more. People think the Colts are going to come calling for Jimmy G, but Carson Wentz makes like $20 million. So they're not going to pay Jimmy, knowing that Carson Wentz is on the hook for that much money this year, and then he has next year. So
I don't think the Colts can afford him anymore.
Right. So, you know, we have to factor that in. And teams think that, you know, if there's a quarterback injury to their team, that somebody's going to come to the 49ers and give up a first-round pick. That's not how this works. That's just not going to happen.
Yeah, the Colts only have $11.2 million in cap space now. I mean, they had a lot, but they signed a lot of players. And so now they're down to kind of the middle of the road of the NFL. The 49ers have more cap space than the Colts at this point. So while it would seem, I mean, the way you mentioned Carson Wentz, if they're paying him a shit ton of money, they're not also going to trade a lot to pick up Jimmy G and also pay him a lot of money. So I don't know, man. I just don't know how they would handle that situation. Do you keep a $28 million backup that's going to ride the bench unless Trey gets hurt? There's your knock on wood. Or do you just outright release him? And to me, that seems like the most likely scenario if Trey Lance outright won the competition and the 49ers were like, look, because there's even a locker room element to it. You know, if the team sees that Trey Lance is the better player, you can't just roll with Jimmy Garoppolo, because people are going to call your bullshit. Not publicly, but they're going to be like, this doesn't make sense. Right. I don't understand. You know, and would that happen? I don't know, because Jimmy G is so well-liked, and I don't see Jimmy G playing so bad that people are like, how could we be starting this guy? But just interesting scenarios, and obviously I think it's a little too early to talk about that kind of stuff. We'll see if it's real. You know, if Trey Lance can keep up the pressure and continue to get better, and Jimmy G kind of – and again, there's a chance, because Jimmy's never looked like the best practice player. There's a reality. I'm just not sure. I think it's a little too early for that. So
it goes back to what we talked about, where how bad did the team bungle the situation if Lance beats out Jimmy G? Just knowing with his contract situation, because that's what it's going to come down to. That would be a problem, and a 49er problem is how I would look at that.
Well, and I mean, and at that point, then the best thing you can do is just cut bait, because then you're like, well, they just saved $25 million. Got it. You know, like, it's easy at that point. You know, like, is it necessarily how they thought it was all going to work out? No, but I mean, nobody's going to really, you know, even if you wish they would have been able to get something in some sort of a trade, nobody's going to balk at the idea that the 49ers just cleared up $25 million in cap space and now they're rolling with their third overall pick. Like, it's not necessarily something that's, you know.
I think that's a fair way to look at it, like a fair response to that, because, you know, he is a future. And yes, my biggest issue would be that $25 million could have been a very promising cornerback, and we have no issues, you know, with
right
who's yep. opposite of Jason Verrett. Right,
you're now, talking so. About like if they went and did that earlier in the offseason.
Right, and you, so knowing taken, that you were going to move up for Lance, because they were talking about it in January, so the ripple effect on the rest of your team building is where I would have an issue.
Yeah, it's true. That's true. So moving along, some of the other just kind of rolling through. You know what? Before we get into this, because obviously the Jimmy versus Lance is the bulk of the conversation, I'm going to talk to you guys really quickly about Blue Wire Hustle. Okay. And for anybody that, you know, and I hate myself for not knowing the name of this right now, but the name of their podcast, but Blue Wire just signed one of their first people to make it all the way through the Blue Wire Hustle program. I'm going to look it up while I'm talking to you guys about this. Was a 49ers podcast, and I can't remember the name of it. But if you're listening to me talking about this, thinking that it's like not likely that you could get through, just know that one of the it's called the Talkin' Niners podcast with Kobe Ransom and Niners Wire Sam. They got all the way through the Blue Wire Hustle program, and now they are producing 49ers podcasts for Blue Wire. So, you know, as much I think when we read these, you know, these pitches, a lot of people kind of just gloss over them. But if you're somebody that, you know, you love listening to us on Striking Gold, then what's stopping you from grabbing a mic and starting your own show, especially knowing that there's a solid chance that you could be on the Blue Wire Network recording podcasts. Blue Wire Hustle is your deal. If that's something you're thinking about and it's like real, then check out Blue Wire Hustle. Hustle was created to give everyone the opportunity to take your podcast to the next level. Or like I said, if you're someone that wants to host a podcast and you just don't know where to start, Hustle's the perfect place for you. As part of the program, you're going to receive personal cover art, Q&As with Blue Wire's top podcasters, access to the community Discord, and an e-learning course full of tips and tricks that they've even introduced us to, and it's super useful stuff. On top of that, we'll help you get your show pushed out to Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, all the listening platforms. Best part is you can get all of it for $15 a month, same rate as any other hosting site would charge just for the initial setup. So if you're ready to do more than just listening to us talk about the 49ers, then make your voice heard on Hustle. Acceptance into the program is limited. Get your application in today. To apply, you're going to go to bwhustle.com/join. Check out the description box for this episode to find out more. That's bwhustle.com/join. And again, if you're a 49ers fan, you want to take that podcast to the next level, it's already happened within the 49ers world with Talkin' Niners. So give it a check it out. Check it out. Give it a look, whatever you want to call it. But anyways, moving on. I mean, there's a lot of randomness. Let's talk about, before we get into the injuries and the people that aren't participating, let's keep talking about what you saw on the field. Given what we've already seen from Brandon Ayuk, talk to me about Brandon Ayuk and Deebo Samuel. What do you think, man?
They're a difficult duo to stop. So I was critical of Ayuk just because I would say Verrett got the best of him on Saturday. I would say that he had some mental mistakes, some mental lapses, I guess is a better way to put it, just with drops during individual. You know, Verrett was able to break up a pass on him early, and then he had the interception late. But he's still getting open. Let's not make any mistake. There's one play where he's running a crossing route, and the ball's behind him, thrown from Lance, and stops, which is not easy to do when you're running in a certain direction, and makes the catch, wheels back up, outruns everybody for a touchdown. like there aren't guys on the team who could do that. Deebo is just, there's no, every time I see him, I think back to him running a 4.48 and just think like, what did he just wake up and not do anything before he ran that? Because he screams 4.3s. He's so fast. And he's running, again, like just RPO routes, just slants and breaking routes. He can get to the edge on a jet sweep, unlike most receivers. So, like, the way they complement each other, I think, is very important. And if they can just become consistent, whether it's beating press, beating man coverage, especially with that George Kittle guy, they're going to have some they're going to be tough to stop, man. And they're really good. And they're still really, really young too. So they're gonna have to be more consistent. You know, Samuel's probably going to always have some like an iffy drop here and there. But I really don't have much that's bad to say about the two. Just because I know that they're so young, and I know that, you know, there's always going to be room to grow. But goodness, this, like, I'm just so impressed by the speed, and they can get open early, which matters to me. And I remember Trey Lance hit Deebo on a Florida route, which I heard them talk about. What would you guess a Florida route is? Think about how you break it down. Yeah, think about how you would break it down to your players, because that's exactly what it is.
I'm trying to think. I mean, I honestly don't know what the Florida route is. I'm just trying to think really quickly why it would be called that. I mean, maybe like a – I mean, I'm just trying to, like, think of the shape of Florida and the fact that it's kind of like an out or an in, Florida. Something like that.
Five-step Florida out.
It's like a speed out, right?
Yep. Five-step out. Very simple. So, like, if you have off coverage, they check to that, gets the ball in his hands, and now you have Debo outside one-on-one with a corner with a head of steam. Like, that's what you want. That's how you want to draw it up. And you can do that with condensed splits. So that's, I think, you know, just quick hitting routes to Debo like that is something where the 49ers could really do well. But there are a couple other guys who I think will make it tough for, you know, I would say that they're going to get their fair share of targets as well. So Mohamed Sanu, he did have a drop, which – he was being lauded for Mike McDaniel for having the best type of catching technique, which is true because he shields, uses body, and he's like the only guy who fully extends his arms to catch the ball, which shouldn't be an issue at the NFL. I think that's really what gets Ayuk and Debo in trouble when it comes to catching the balls, because they just let it into their body. But Sanu, arms fully extended, elbows in, like everything you want. And he does look better than last year, and I'm not going to say he's like Julio Jones, but he just looks a little more shiftier. The other guy actually is Trent Sherfield, who is going to be a guy who I imagine, you know, he might have a game here and there where he has like 4 for 48, like that kind of performance every few games, which is perfectly fine for a guy who is essentially making like
next. So he looks like somebody that's making the roster, do you?
Yes, I think that's the best way to put it. Like, if you're going to come up with 5 to 6 receivers, there's no way you can objectively watch and think Trent Sherfield isn't one of them, especially knowing that he has, you know, return value, special team value. But, yeah, he was open on a couple corner routes, a couple out routes, and, you know, whenever they threw him the ball, whether it was – and these throws are coming from Jimmy and Trey, so he's working with the ones and the twos. I imagine he's going to be a guy who makes this roster for sure. He's more consistent hands wise than Richie James.
If you had to guess right now, and obviously it's too early for this, who do you think takes? Well, I mean, this could be an easier answer than I think it is. Who do you think fills the Kendrick Bourne role?
It's Sanu. He's exclusively working with the first team. He's like their slot when he goes to, and even when it's not, you know, 11 personnel, sometimes 21. 12, and Sanu will be in there, whether over like an Ayuk or, and of course that can just be for a run play, but it's going to be Sanu, I think, because of the trust factor. So that's a big deal. But,
well, he's been there and done that.
Yeah, like he knows. And when you say know the offense, it's not just having played under Kyle Shanahan. It's like, you know, making side adjustments as a receiver. And I think Alex Mack is another big reason why. So they know what to look at on the defense, and that'll help them help the guy next to them. So that veteran leadership will go a long way.
Well, when I first asked the question too, I was like, well, if everything goes ideally, in an ideal world, Debo Samuel takes up most of the Kendrick Bourne production, because a lot of Kendrick Bourne's production last season, although he has been pretty consistent, was based on the fact that Debo Samuel was not out there. You know, he only started 5 games and he only played in 7. So you would hope that the bulk of Kendrick Bourne's production just gets split between like Debo Samuel and Brandon Ayuk, and you get those, and George Kittle obviously, but just means you're getting the ball into the hands of your best players more often.
No Jalen Hurd on Saturday, and yes, on Friday he had a routine maintenance day. Did not hear anything from him on Saturday. So, oh boy.
Maybe the maintenance team got backed up and they had to push the Jalen Hurd to the next day. You all taken your cars in to get fixed, and you expect to get a call by the end of the day to come pick it up. They're like, hey, we didn't get to it first thing tomorrow morning. Maybe that's what happened to Jalen Hurd. He just had to get That was what happened to him today.
If he's not out there on Monday, Kyle Shanahan is going to have some answering to do. That's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, because if you're not going to come out and say that a player has an injury, and you know, and the reason they're not out there is because of maintenance day, but then they're not out there the next day, then obviously the maintenance day was maybe not some, maybe the main, they were trying a lot harder to maintain something a little more serious than we thought. But I get the idea of easing Jalen Hurd in. That's fine. But it just kind of makes me reel back just a little bit, because now it's 2 days and you wonder, is it more than just maintenance? Is the Jalen Hurd story just rolling along exactly how it has been? And, you know, the big chance, the big shot that we were just talking about that he could have yesterday, or excuse me, our last pod, all of a sudden seems a little more silly. So we'll see. But what about the – I mean, we haven't talked much about the defense. I know you've only got to see them in person one day. Did anything stand out to you about them?
They are fast. I will say that. So no Bosa, Ford, Kinlaw during team drills. So the offensive line, you know, they didn't really have a threat. Obviously, Samson Ebukam is a work in progress. And, you know, Eric Armstead's probably not going to shine in this situation anyway. But there is plenty of time for the quarterbacks to throw the ball. But I would say the defensive backs, just talking about the receivers, there was a period where probably 2 to 3 minutes, maybe even 4 minutes, where nobody, like Jimmy and Trey, just had to run because nobody was getting open. And I would say the safeties are a big reason for that. I want to go as far to say that Jimmy Ward is the best skilled player on the team. He is really good, like really good. He, during one-on-ones, he went, like he limited the receivers 0 for 5. And I know it's one-on-ones, but you've seen one-on-ones. It's literally designed for the offense to win in every scenario, whether it's between the linemen and the D-linemen or the receivers and the DBs. But he had one play where he's just like jamming Debo, who is bigger and stronger than him, and Debo doesn't get off the line. I forgot who the other receiver was, but it was just like a pivot return route. And Jimmy's just like in his hip, waiting, almost waiting for him to run the route. It's really impressive just how he moves. Obviously, Verrett was really impressive. He had a couple pass breakups. He had an interception. You don't see much from the other side. The drop-off after them is pretty steep, I would say. Tavon Wilson's playing for Tart. The young guys, Ambry Thomas was getting burned a little bit, I'm not going to lie. So that was definitely an issue. It's tough, though, because it's on RPOs, so there's no second-level threat to be in the throwing window. So it's just kind of him, the entire field, and like a 12, 15-yard, you know, crossing route. So good luck. No Dre Greenlaw on Saturday. So that meant Demetrius Flanagan Foles and Azeez Al-Shaire are the linebackers.
Dre Greenlaw had a blister on his
blister, foot. Correct. Forgot. Somebody said Ronnie Lott would have just chopped it off and played. Thanks, buddy.
Yeah.
Definitely thanks. During training camp. but, no, the defense – They are going to be more aggressive. We are seeing, you know, a little more man. We're seeing more blitzing. They're walking up Fred Warner into, you know, as a pass rusher, and they're walking up him and whoever the other linebacker is, you know, mugging him up in the A gap.
Fred Warner blitzing and having a head of steam towards an offensive lineman would not be an easy thing to deal with. Like, whether or not he develops kind of some legit pass rush moves, which he could, you know, read Nick Bosa's book, probably all he wanted, but like that's kind of a scary thought. He's such a big ass dude, man. Like, it's hard to describe Fred Warner like in a way that makes sense. Like, he just looks big. Like, I know 6'3 is not necessarily huge on a football field, but he's like 6'3 and completely filled out. So it's like, it just looks like somebody that would be really, really difficult to stop if he had a full head of steam on like a blitz from really anywhere.
So I think, aside from his athleticism, like he just kind of – it's like a running back, you know, where they're patient. They let, you know, all the trash clear, and then they just pop out of the hole. That's what it's like for Warner, but blitzing, where he just waits for the right crease, and then he shoots through that gap. And he did that for a sack. We obviously talked about his interception. So honestly, the most impressive play that Warner had, it was a draw and perfectly blocked. There was nobody, like all the defense rushes up the field and it's him, it's Warner and pretty much like three guys and nobody else. Warner ends up beating his guy, runs around another guy, tackles Sermon for like a gain of three. And it should have been like a 23-yard play. So those are the things that Warner brings to the table. There's another one where no target, but you know, he's running with Sanu, carrying him up the seam, where you just don't see linebackers doing that. But you have to give credit to Al-Shahir. You also have to give credit to there was a Elijah Sullivan is another name that stood out. Just looking at my notes here, but
who's the linebacker from Stanford that they brought in as an undrafted free agent? I thought I was reading a little bit about him.
Sullivan is Ohio State, I believe. I don't know. I don't remember.
Hold on, I got it. Hold on. No, it's not Elijah Sullivan. Justin Hilliard.
Okay.
Justin Hilliard. I don't know if he what kind of shot he's getting because Sullivan is Kansas State.
Oh, okay, there we go.
Which is not a slight whatsoever, obviously. But no, it's just interesting. You know, obviously the fact that
Marshall Harris working with the twos at linebacker.
Yeah, didn't he switch position?
Yep, at linebacker. So he's playing Will with the twos and he's just much more comfortable closer to line of scrimmage as you can expect.
Which is kind of interesting because that goes towards what we were talking about a little earlier in the offseason when we were saying, look, if you had a choice, would you want to do like a, you know, three linebackers or like five defensive backs? And we were both leaning towards defensive backs, just, you know, whether it's a strong safety or somebody like that. So it's interesting that they kind of went that way with Marcel Harris because it's just a nice little hybrid, an athlete. You know, are there guys that will be better at that? We'll see. But it'll be cool to see how much they actually use that or go that route. Because to me, it kind of just seems like where the NFL's trending. You know,
absolutely
more towards athleticism over brute strength to an extent. I mean, you can't be a liability against the run. But it's just an interesting little thing. Also, we'll see if it develops into anything more.
D'Amico Ryan's actually talked about that where, you know, at the second level, these linebackers, there's the days of being 250 and a thumper, like, is long gone. You have to be able to run side to side, sideline to sideline. So that probably went into the thought process of moving Harris down. Haven't seen much from Tony Jefferson. First of all, he's wearing a hideous number, 41. and he's working with the threes too. Like some twos, but I've seen him out there with the threes. So maybe they're just kind of slow rolling him, but it's Tavon Wilson who's working in place of Tart. And I like to watch, you know, how they interact with each other on the sideline. And Wilson's talking to Ayuk when he does something, and he's talking to the receivers, the tight ends, trying to get in their mind. So I like that. That's different for sure.
Like trying to find out what like giving them sharing information with them or asking them what they did,
almost like he's critiquing and coaching them, like, hey, you could have done this, you could have done that. So yeah, he's a like a mini coach.
I think that might be one of the what's the way to say this. I think NFL veterans over time, especially if they've had the luxury of kind of like job security. I think a lot of players in the NFL, and rightfully so, spend a lot of time just worrying about their own spot on the roster, making the team, you know, becoming a starter. And obviously that's rightfully so. But I feel like the very next quality that great NFL players pick up is coaching your teammates, because they probably, especially if you're a veteran, you've been on whether it's the same team, you've been on really successful teams, I would be willing to bet that one of the elements that they find that's constant throughout successful teams is coaches on the field and not just, you know, and coaching up your teammates, whether it's learning from them, offering information. It's probably just something that's a mainstay on all great teams. Like, there are probably no great teams that don't have veterans willing to move over to the other side of the ball and share information. You know what I mean? It's just, it just seems like something veteran players always do, period.
It seems so. He hasn't been here for long at all. And for him to be able to do that, like, it just has to come naturally. It has to be so easy for them to do. You wonder who else is doing that besides Wilson, because he's been around for a while, but it's cool to notice those type of things.
It is. It just seems like to me, it's like all veteran players act like that, you know, like because they know the value of sharing their information. Like, how often have you seen Trent? And Nick Bosa shows up as a rookie, and him and Joe Staley are immediately just going back and forth.
Yeah.
And Joe Staley is learning something from a rookie. And to me, like I said, successful veterans, they probably are the first people, or the people that most commonly realize how much can be gained from just completely coaching up every moment that you can. If you ever have any information, share it, because that's how teams become great. They end up playing for each other. You know, it's just kind of one of those things that you love to see. And he's been in the NFL for 10 years. So, you know, that guy probably has a ton of information to share, whether or not he's been like, you don't just get to, you know, Tavon Wilson, whether or not he was, I don't know, however great he ever was, but you don't just get to spend 10 years in the NFL. Like,
great point.
You have to be a good player. And the fact that he's just immediately steps into an organization is like, and is automatically at that point. It just shows you that that's just one of the things that comes with a veteran player that it's really invaluable. And obviously we got to see that firsthand with Sherman. It's just like, man, like, he may not be the best at his position anymore, but how do you put a value on somebody that does that?
He was with the Patriots like his whole rookie contract, and he was a second rounder, and obviously it didn't work out great with the Patriots, but just having that Bill Belichick background, you know, why not bring in another guy with that type of mindset?
Right. And they just gave me a chance to rant about good teammates, but anyways, so one thing we got to talk about before we cut loose is little my buddy Raheem Mostert was not feeling the conversations about his knee because he was held out, or wasn't held out of practice, kind of towards the beginning of training camp, had limited reps. He was kind of doing a 50-50 split with Trey Sermon, if not Sermon getting more of the reps. Raheem had a knee brace on, and maybe this was reporters on the ground kind of assuming that meant he was nursing a knee injury. But Raheem, and this is word for word, got on Twitter. This was 2 days ago. What's today? Today's Saturday. So this was Friday, Thursday. I'm just trying to make sure.
Love just you talking through that.
Yeah, man. I mean, like, you could like literally picture me thinking and looking up towards the ceiling through the microphone. Like, hey, we're just talking ball here. But all right, Raheem, in his infinite wisdom, said, "I'm going to address this one time and one time only. I am not injured. And to the media trying to make something out of nothing, I won't allow it. I wear a knee brace in practice for prevention and for my longevity in this league. I had this brace made years ago and wore it in other training camp practices. Why is it a focus now? I won't allow me to put me into your hole of being old, washed up, and injured. I'm just getting started." That's pretty, it's bold, not bold. Bold implies some type of like risk. It's like pretty straightforward.
So let's add the context here. So the reporter asked Mostert, "Hey, why do you practice with a brace on and you don't play with a brace on?" It felt pretty innocuous. I didn't think he was trying to get at something, but perhaps, you know, somebody mentioned that to Mostert, or, you know, he thought about it after the fact and like, is he trying to insinuate that I'm hurt? Because Shanahan did say, you know, we're kind of slow rolling Mostert in there. He's been splitting the carries with Trey Sermon early on, but he never does that. Like, he's very and you know him far better than I do, but just based on what I've seen from him, he's more reserved. Just a good human, obviously easy to root for, but not really somebody to speak out in that manner. So that had to catch you off guard, knowing him.
Yeah, I mean, well, it doesn't. It doesn't. Okay, because I don't know if I've told this story on the pod before. I think I have once. When Raheem Mostert first requested his trade after they were trying to work through the contract stuff, couldn't get it done. He requested a trade, which ended up being, you know, as far as the result goes, the right move because it spurred action. They got it done. And I think he was going into a season where he had zero guarantees. And obviously he'd gotten to a point where he was the guy in the backfield. And I was a little critical of him in the fact that not that he shouldn't obviously get that contract. Y'all know how I feel about contracts. I just thought, like, man, like, it's playing with fire, because when you request a trade, you know, where are you going to go? Is it going to allow you to showcase your skills as well as Shanahan's offense? I just, and being, you know, what I would consider a friend with Raheem, played countless hours of Xbox with him, I didn't want to just be like, I'm 100% behind Raheem and whatever he wants. Like, and that is true, but I just wanted to give both sides of the coin. So I was like, yes, you know, obviously he needs to get paid. He needs to take care of his family. He's a family man. He needs to do whatever he needs to do to get that contract, and don't hold back. But at the same time, I flipped the coin and I said, look, you're talking about wanting to leave what might be one of the, you know, a top three, top five destination for running backs as far as, you know, what you can do in that offense. So I was just kind of presenting the other side. And probably the podcast published that morning, just a little later that evening, I got a call from Raheem. And the first thing he says on the phone is, you know what, Rob, you aren't shit. And yes. I was like, yes. What did I do? And he's like, I listened to that podcast. And I was like, we both started laughing. And it was a very lighthearted conversation. We ended up talking for quite a while. And he just like told me where his head was at and where his heart's at. And it was a great thing. But so while I do say that Raheem's a very, very kind person, I'm not going to say that he will take anything that he considers to be bullshit, because he straight up called me up and walked through with me all the things that he, you know, the reasons he was in that position at that point. And it was awesome, dude. Talk about a humble and an awesome person. You know, just the fact that he felt like he wanted to call me and talk through that whole thing was just fucking, it was cool, man. And it just shows you how genuine he is and how important this all is to him.
You know, so, what you just said, people pretend like these guys ignore social media, or they're and not just social media, but whether it's podcasts, whether it's articles, whatever it may be. No, that's not true. In the locker room, they're like, they get on Twitter right away. People want to know what you are saying about them, and that's hard for people to understand. But you don't have thousands of people talking about you, so of course you're not going to understand. Of course you're going to say, just block it out. But nobody talks about you. So I honestly don't have any problem with players lashing out. I have no problem at all. And obviously he knows you. You guys have a relationship. But if these guys feel like they're being mistreated and you want to call, whether it's a reporter, whether it's a fan out, do it, man. Like, freedom of speech. I have no problem with that at all.
No, I mean, if you get to talk about players without, you know, you get unlimited you know, access to talk publicly about these players. I don't have any problem at all if a player using his platform to talk about you. Like, right. It can go both ways. And obviously there's probably a lot of different reasons why a team and a player would want to avoid that type of thing, because it gets close to almost like a no-win situation, but sometimes it isn't. And sometimes it's very necessary, you know? So, It really does go both ways. And I also have zero problem with a player just saying what he feels like needs to be said. I mean, these are people, and I think we lose sight of that a lot of the time. Just,
yeah, these are people. That's a really good way to put it.
It's weird that you have to say that. But I'm trying to think, is there anything else we need to talk about? Tight end Jordan Matthews yet to make his splash.
Back again.
I know, man. I think this is legitimately about the fifth or sixth time he's been re-signed with the team, maybe more.
But it's different since he's playing a new position, right?
Right, of course. Yes, of course. I'm sorry. I'm just looking through everything. Is there anything we haven't touched on? I mean, I think that's pretty good. We've talked longer than I thought we were going to have to talk. So today's Saturday. Sunday is a day off. Monday is another unpadded practice, and then they put all the pads, correct?
Right. Kyle Shanahan misspoke. He said five practices, and he was thinking 5 days. Not a big counter, Kyle Shanahan. So, yeah, it's Tuesday.
Listening to him talk shit about his son as the ball boy was so funny.
He said he has his mom's hands.
Yeah, man. He said you're your mother's child. That's so funny. And but yeah, Kyle Shanahan's son is acting as the ball boy, and Kyle Shanahan was kind of ribbing him a little bit during a press conference about having bad hands. But That's so nothing a few hundred routes won't fix.
Yeah, he's right. He's going to, like, he can do whatever he wants. I imagine he's already doing it right now. But so he's playing, he's lining up as running back sometimes in like drills before they really get going. So it's cool to see that aspect where there's still some lightheartedness going on. And obviously, you know, these guys are talking trash to each other. The competition is good between guys like Ayuk and Verrett because they're talking to each other after each play. And not in like a demeaning bad way at all. Like, they're literally just talking. So you can tell there's a camaraderie, and that's probably the better way to put it.
Right, right. So Monday, another non-padded practice. Unless you have any plans or reservations, maybe we could plan on jumping back on here on Tuesday to talk after the first padded practice.
Let's do it.
Okay, and then maybe, I don't know, how many practices are there after that first? Do they do 3 days of padded practice?
So it'll go Tuesday, Wednesday, break, Friday, Saturday, Sunday.
Okay. Yeah, then maybe we'll talk Tuesday and Thursday or something like that. Just try to get two in just to capitalize on the excitement of training camp. But, yeah, man, I mean, have they been doing one-on-ones?
Today was the first day they did one-on-ones, and that's where Jimmy Ward showed out.
Ward is so good.
Yeah, yeah.
He's so good, man. And it makes me happy to say that because the guy didn't get off to the best start of his career. He was asked to play, like, three different positions in 3 years, and one of his first in the 49ers homecoming, first game at Levi's, he was dumb. Was it the first game at Levi's? Yes. And Brandon Marshall just – He got tasked with Brandon Marshall and near Brandon Marshall's prime.
Good luck.
So, you know, like, he got off to a rough start, but now he's just legit one of the best players at his position. I mean, at least he's up there. He's a very, very good football player, and he's a super cool dude. So it's just been cool to see him kind of bring it around, you know.
During one-on-ones, Brandon Ayuk just ran by – like Verrett, and I forgot, I think it was Ken Webster was the other guy, but like easy speed, but he dropped both of them on nine routes, where it's just, that's where the mental lapses are. Probably the best route came where, and we can't, you know, videotape any of these, which is so
yeah, funny. That's probably my fault.
So it really is. Thanks for ruining it for the rest of our lives. Yeah. What's it? Austin Watkins made Jason Verrett fall on a slant.
Yeah, I haven't heard his name at all.
It was a nice little release where he kind of, you know, walks him, a walk release is what I call it. He walks him outside, gives him a head fake, cuts back inside. And that right after that is when Verrett was like, oh, my legs are so heavy. But he had a really good rep. Sanu had some good reps, but they're mainly all underneath. Speaking of one-on-ones and just – We didn't really talk about the offensive line just because they don't have pads on, but
no, yeah.
I don't think it's going to be easy for Aaron Banks to beat out Daniel Brunskill. Like, Daniel Brunskill is not a bad player, and like, he's not making mistakes. And obviously that could change when they put the pads on, once they go against other teams. But I think we're premature to assume that Banks is just going to unseat Brunskill because he hasn't got a single rep with the first team through four practices.
Yeah, I don't assume that that's going to be something that's handed to him either. I mean, Brunskill was there. Experience and, like, what's the bet? Like, you know, the experience and the gel that offensive line will have together. You know, Brunskill spent last season playing next to Mike McGlinchey, and that's tough to overcome. You know, you have to be clearly the better player to just for a team to dismiss the experience that Brunskill's going to have. And that still could very well happen, but it's not easy. You know, somebody who has spent plenty of time in the league, and whether it's they were an undrafted guy from the – what was the name of that football league?
The AAF.
Yeah. Whether you're from the AAF or not, man, once you get in the league and you prove that you belong in the league, you don't just get dismissed, you know, so – it'll be interesting to see that competition, because that one seems like, of all the roster competitions for a starting spot, and I'm trying to think of them, there's not that many. That might be the most intense.
It definitely probably the biggest one outside of the obvious quarterback. Right. But, yeah, you want your right guard to be important.
Yeah, so And again, that's a good problem to have, because I guarantee you they're both solid. You know, you're not talking about two bad guys, two shitty players competing for the job. And the rest of that offensive line looks like it's just going to be very good. So a little bit of competition at a single spot isn't going to hurt anybody.
Competition's great.
Yep. But anyways, I think that's it, man. You got any last words? Anything we didn't talk about from your training camp experience on day one?
No, man. It was just good to see just them compete. It was good to see good players play well. And it was good to see, you know, just see the quarterbacks go through a little adversity and how they handle it. So,
yeah, it's important. And it was important to me, too, when I was there, to never forget that you're getting to watch the absolute best football players in the world right in front of you. You know what I mean? Like, practiced against each other, and you're like, damn, man, this is good football. it's cool to do, man. It's cool to see. Anyways, I think that's it. I think it's done. Plan on me and KP being back on here early next week. Tuesday, unless something comes up Monday, and then we got to jump on to talk about. But plan on hearing from us Tuesday. That would be Wednesday for you. And then maybe we'll jump back here on Thursday, and then that would mean Friday for you guys. So a couple of training camp episodes coming up next week. Appreciate you guys. Thanks for listening to Striking Gold. Make sure you're following KP_show on Twitter. Make sure you're checking in to Niners Nation looking for his coverage, because he's there and he's detailing it all. So make sure you guys support that. Make sure that you follow him on Twitter. Follow me on Twitter. And make sure you're rating and subscribing and all that good stuff you're supposed to do to support a podcast. Appreciate it. Appreciate you guys sticking through it all. Obviously, wouldn't be here without you guys. So, hey, that's KP. I'm Rob for another Striking Gold episode. We are signing out.